listening to the Rabbit Room podcast. Visit us at rabbitroom.com for more information. Hello, I'm Jonathan Rogers. Welcome to the Rabbit Room podcast. C.S. Lewis once said, "I know nothing that gives me such a spiritual feeling of being washed as to read George MacDonald." Lewis was a young atheist when he first read George MacDonald's Fantasties. The experience was a serious blow to his rationalistic and naturalistic vision of the world. He later wrote that this first encounter with MacDonald baptized his imagination. In The Great Divorce, MacDonald is Lewis's guide through heaven. MacDonald is Beatrice to Lewis's Dante. If MacDonald was so important to Lewis, he must have been important. But for whatever reason, I've never quite been able to get into George MacDonald. Ron Block, however, loves George MacDonald. So I invited him to sit down and explain what's so great about George MacDonald. Pete Peterson and Buddy Green were there too. Welcome to the Rabbit Room podcast.
Awesome.
Ron Glad Block and here. I are sitting close to the Pete Peterson's wood-burning stove at Northwind Manor. We also have Pete in the room and Buddy Green.
Buddy Green.
Surprise guest.
Woo! Hello.
That's his actual voice.
Yeah, that was
Hello.
Real.
It's been a long, hard winter.
Ron, you love George MacDonald. I like George MacDonald insofar as I know anything about George MacDonald, but I don't know that much. So I was just hoping you would sort of make a case for what's great about George MacDonald, why I should love him, why I should make more effort to read him.
Well, I got into Lewis, C.S. Lewis, and read Narnia when I was young and read it over and over as a teenager, and then started reading Lewis's works. And Lewis mentions MacDonald constantly. And he's always pointing to him as a spiritual master and, you know, baptizing my imagination. And so eventually, in my late 20s and early 30s, I thought, I need to read something by George MacDonald. And, you know, in the beginning, when I would read MacDonald, I didn't like him because he talks so much about obedience that being raised in a legalistic sort of frame, I was constantly flip-flopping from legalism to license. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of living in Romans 8, things I want to do and not do, and then you try hard and then you fail and that kind of life. So when I heard MacDonald prompting to more of the same, you know, I was like, I would feel sick. He would kind of make me feel sick. And, agitated. And
agitated.
So, yeah, I'd feel agitated inside. And you know, it took a lot to process. But the thing about MacDonald is if you persevere with him, he gets deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And as I've read him through the years, like, it gets more and more deep, not just an outer obedience to something God has said in his word, but it's an actual relationship with God that he's pointing to. And the obedience that comes from faith, which is God actually giving you specific, individualized instruction. You're actually having a relationship with God. That's what he's pointing to, is a relationship. But the outer obedience is there. the law is there. He says, got a quote here. He says, in order to fulfill the commonest law, we must rise into a loftier region altogether, a region that is above law, because it is spirit and life and makes the law. In order to keep the law towards our neighbor, we must love our neighbor. Right, what a concept. We must actually love the person, and then we'll keep the law toward him. And then he says, the law comes to make us long for the needful grace, that is, for the divine condition in which love is all, for God is love. So he's saying, you know, you want to have God as the source of love inside of you. And so then he goes on to say, as you cannot keep the law without first rising into the love of your neighbor, so you cannot love your neighbor without first rising higher still. So his whole thing is to drive you inward to the center of spiritual life and what it means. And he says, the whole system of the universe works upon this principle, the driving of things upward towards the center. The man who exercises his willpower to love his neighbor can do so by no immediately operative exercise of the will. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to love my neighbor, and you don't find it in you. And then he goes on further, deeper. He says it's the man fulfilled by God, from whom he came and by whom he exists, who alone can as himself love his neighbor, who came from God too and is by God too. In God alone can man meet man. So he drives you smack into relationship with God first, because it's love God, then love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And you said, in God alone can man meet man.
Right.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, because in order for us to even love God first, then we got to be driven further still into knowing that God loves us. Mm-hmm. We love him because he first loved us. So the whole thing becomes a driving force. The law becomes a driving force that forces us into recognizing our need and then going to get our need for love met. And then only then, when we begin to get our need for love met, we can love our neighbor, or begin to, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I love about McDonald, is as I've gone deeper and deeper into him, and there's still lots of books I've not read of his. But
what was this you were quoting from right here?
This was Unspoken Sermons.
Uh-huh. I ran across something the other day that was one of the best definitions of idolatry I've ever seen. The problem with idolatry, I'm paraphrasing here, is that you end up loving something that can't love you back.
Yeah.
And so there's a sadness in idolatry. Mm-hmm. That I'm not sure we think about often enough, that it's a sadness.
Yeah, because it breaks you.
Yeah.
And it keeps breaking you. As long as you hang on to that thing, it's just basically you're beating yourself over the head with this thing that you won't let go of.
Yeah.
And put God in that hand, you know?
Put God in that hand.
I mean, you know, instead of hanging on to an idol, you grasp the hem of his garment.
Yeah.
You know? And get some real experience. Which
puts me in mind of one of my favorite McDonald things in Lilith.
Uh-huh.
Lilith.
Yeah.
Was it she has in her hand? Does it ever reveal that?
It doesn't.
Like through the whole, Lilith is like this queen of the moon or something.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole story, she has her hand clenched around something that she will not let go of. And when it comes to the end, like the price of her redemption is that because she wouldn't she wouldn't relinquish what she had.
And she couldn't.
Right, she couldn't let
go
of it anymore.
And they had gritted teeth. I cannot let it go.
Right, so they cut her hand off.
Yeah.
And then what's beautiful about it is they take that hand out into the wilderness and plant it.
Yeah.
And, like, something beautiful grows out of it.
Well, that sounds like a great divorce for sure.
She had to cut it off.
I love what you said, though, about Lilith. It never says what she is grasping, because it doesn't matter what she was grasping.
Yeah.
Right? Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Have you read that book?
No.
It's one of my favorite books because, it's a good example of McDonald. Even though it's a unique book among his books, the themes in it, some of the themes like the search for identity, like Mr. Vane, the main character, he doesn't know who he is. And it's one of the first questions in Lilith that he's asked, and I got to find
who
my
are
quote
you?
Here. Yeah, he says, who are you?
So Lilith is one of McDonald's fantasy novels. Adult fantasy novels.
Yeah.
I mean, adult in that it's for grown-ups.
Yeah.
But,
which is different. Like, he has a huge breadth of work.
He does.
Realistic novels that are just kind of like dramas.
Yeah.
And then
what are those? I didn't know he did realistic.
Donald Grant was one. I actually named my son Ethan Donald.
Really?
Yeah, his middle name is named after that character that I love so much. And then Thomas Wingfold is another. And a lot of those sort of, which I would call like period fiction or whatever. We would call it that now. It was just modern fiction back then. But in a lot of those books, the main character is searching not necessarily for identity, but who they are and why they're there and what their purpose is and who God is. There's this kind of struggle aspect always to the main character as he tries to find his place in the world. And it's really enlightening for your own journey. I mean, you read this stuff, and it's just it's thick and deep, and it's really chewy, you know. And it's a lot to think about. But the identity issue in Lilith, he's asked, who are you? Mr. Vane is asked, who are you? And he says, I became aware I could give him no notion of who I was. Indeed, who was I? Then I understood that I didn't know myself. I didn't know what I was. I had no grounds on which to determine. As for the name I went by in my own world, I'd forgotten it, and I didn't care to recall it, for it meant nothing, and what it might be was plainly of no consequence here. It didn't make any difference what his name was, because he didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. So he embarks on this long search through action, and bad action and good action, and he begins to, you know, see some truths about who he is and who he isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lilith is a phenomenal book that I cannot begin to explain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big. It's big, bigger themes really than any book I've ever read. It's about ultimate redemption. It's just really huge.
I think at the end of it, you feel what it was about more than you can even articulate it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of magical to me.
It is magical because it goes beyond words. You can't articulate exactly what he's.
Is it a long book?
Yeah. No, not really.
200 pages?
It's very... is it Fantasties? Is that how you pronounce it? Or Fantasties? Both those are very dreamlike. You know, it's almost like you're reading somebody's dream. You know, because sometimes they're disjointed, these weird disjointed episodes. And Fantasties is almost a series of short stories in a way with the same lead character.
Yeah.
So if you were going to tell people where to start with George MacDonald... Because I remember trying to read him one time, and I think I picked up Fantasties, and I made it about 10 pages in and thought, wow.
That's my experience.
Yeah. It's a strange book.
Yeah, it is.
So that was probably not the place to start.
I would say it depends. I would ask the person, I go, well, what kind of books are you into? What do you like to read? And if they said, I like reading, you know, novels, and, you know, I probably wouldn't point them toward the fantasy. But if they said fantasy, I might say, well, this one's thick, and you got to chew on it, but it's... fantasy.
And he's also got some great short stories.
Yes, yeah, short stories.
And maybe then, a good entry point.
Yeah, and good entry point. Or if you've you know, read some older writers, because his writing style is sometimes he can meander a little bit in his writing style and sort of be a little over flowery for our own taste today.
Yeah.
So I guess I would ask the person what kind of stuff do you read? You read theology. And you read novels.
Yeah, and he's a contemporary of Dickens.
Yeah.
MacDonald is. I have a little bit of problem trying to read Dickens, you know, because it's 19th century English.
You have trouble with Dickens, is that what you said?
Reading him.
Huh.
Now, you know, if I see one of his stories adapted to a movie. Mm-hmm.
You know, the duck that involves animated ducks.
Actually, you know, David Lean, who did... you know, all these great epic movies. He started by doing a lot of Dickens. He did Great Expectations and David Copperfield, and they're great black and white movies and great ways to experience Dickens without having to read.
Man, I can read Dickens all day long.
Well, you're going to get fired from the podcast if you say these sorts of things.
I love those old movies. And Lean's great. Those are great movies.
I think he's one
of my favorite directors anyway. But
with reading, you know, old books, I think what has to happen, and I tell this to people, you have to persevere. Like, you have to go, I'm going to make myself read this for 15 pages a day. And what happens is, just like anything else, if you're working on a guitar solo that you're not used to, it's hard at first, and then you begin to go, oh, okay, I got it. And then you got muscle memory, and your fingers begin to get it.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing when we're reading, and we're reading stuff that's harder than we're used to. You just persevere and push through.
It's not necessarily that... It's harder. It's that it's
we're not used
with a different what's
different
the word?
Sensibility.
Different sensibility than we have currently.
Yeah.
So, like, the longer you persevere with reading that thing, the more you regain that sensibility.
Right.
And
that's a better way to put it.
By the time the book is over, usually you're all in, right? And then it can be jarring to come back and read, you know, something that's modern and really a brief and stripped down, like a writing intensity.
And, you know, for reading MacDonald, like, I started reading MacDonald, I found a Phillips version, Michael Phillips, you know, sort of, he kind of, like, makes it, strips some of the Scottish brogue out and some various aspects of it and kind of slims down the books a little. And I started and I read probably two or three of those, and then I wanted to read... the originals, and I
can tell you the place I started was with the, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's just called George MacDonald by C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
Where Lewis actually took excerpts, his favorite excerpts from MacDonald's sermons and collected them. And, like, so they're really brief. It's almost like bathroom reading. You know, it's just a couple paragraphs at a time.
Yeah.
And on different topics. And it just blew my mind. I couldn't believe how good it was. Right. And then I kind of was like, okay, I've got to go read something
else. Then
I
read that, you then knew where you wanted to start.
Well, I went from there to the short stories, and from short stories to Lilith. And then I haven't read any of his realistic stuff.
Yeah, I love Donald Grant, and then Thomas Wingfold are probably my two favorites.
So for somebody who's more inclined to read theology, philosophy, that sort of thing, where's a good place to start?
You know, George MacDonald in the Pulpit, Johannesson has that, and it's pretty interesting. They're short; they're kind of shorter. Unspoken Sermons is good, but you can't be intimidated by the fact that it's three volumes. You just have to read one little. Yeah, they're but you know, like with Unspoken Sermons, if I just read one of them, I'm good. You know, like for that's good for a day or two. It's like, you know, it's so much, it's so chewy. You know, it really is. It's like it's like eating steak. It goes right down into your innards and explodes. You know?
And I've got to read that,
so to speak.
For more information about the Rabbit Room and the Rabbit Room podcast, visit us at rabbitroom.com. The music on this podcast was composed and performed by Andrew Singa from his album Solar Wind.